May 17th, 2016. Tess, ER, Tafshin, Ayin, Vav. So it is Halacha Day, or we're skipping Rishonim Day to move on to Halacha Day. We did a pseudo Rishonim Day yesterday. And I'd like to focus on the halachos of Yichud. There, I couldn't find in the Torah Tanim any direct halachos that are learned out from these psukim, but there does seem to be a, I don't know if I want to call it a violation, but a observation of the laws of Yichud in this parak, because it says that Potiphar is going after Yosef. So in parak Lamites pasuk Yud Aleph, it says Vayhi Kayom Hazeh Vayevo Habayisa Lasos Melachtos, that he came to the house to do his work. Vein Ishman Shehabayis Sham Habayis, and there was nobody there in the house. So we pointed out the other day, that there's a few interesting, there's nobody from the people of the house that was in the house. So Rashi comments here that the image of the father, the Yokna Shalaviv, was in the house. I mean, there was nobody else from the house, but somebody else not from the house was there. That's what ultimately caused Yosef not to sin. And he came to the house to do his work. What's interesting is that the Gemara makes a comment, right? One of them said he was actually come to do his work. This is a Gemara in Sota. That he came to do his tzrachav. He came to actually have relations with her on that day, and then he saw the image of his father, and he avoided doing it. So the Torah Tamima makes a point that we made this point yesterday, that the Gemara itself, first of all, what indicates it? So the Tosfos asked that question, what indicates from the Pasuk that he had that goal in mind? Tosfos is quoted by the Sifsei Chachamim in the Mikras Gedola, it says vayavo habayis. So you didn't have to say the word vayavo. So there's an inclination towards bia. That's what drew them to see that. So therefore we see that they were having in mind that they were going to do bia. But the Torah Tamima then asks another question. The Torah Tamima asks, and the Torah Tamima is missing from the shelf in the library here. So now I'm forgetting a piece of it, that the Gemara asks someplace else. I'm trying to think where. The Gemara itself, there is a... Oh, by Aaron. That by Aaron and Miriam, so the Pasuk never says actually that Aaron did anything wrong. When Aaron and Miriam spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe, so they're called out, but it never says that Aaron did anything wrong explicitly in the Pasuk. So the Gemara there says, well, that's because Aaron was involved in Lashon Hara, therefore he's included there. So the Gemara asks, we do so much to cover up Lashon Hara, we don't try that. What was the point of saying that? Why did you need to tell us that Aaron was involved? We should strike that part from the text. So we clearly didn't strike that part from the text, but it's still in the text. But yet the Torah team asks, we see that we try to not say bad things about our great people. So why here is there at least a possibility that we're saying this about Yosef, that Yosef came in and the Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk just says that he came to do his work. So why don't you just leave it like that he came to do his work? Why do you have to actually add in, well, he didn't actually come to do his work, he was coming to finally be with Ashes Potiphar, and that's really what's going on in this pasuk. Why did you have to say that? What was motivating Rav Shmuel to say that? So the Torah Tamima answers, says, yes, it's true he came to do that, but that just shows the greatness of Yosef, because even though Yosef, it wasn't just that she came onto him that day, not just that she was coming onto him day after day after day, but he actually had said, I'm going to do it, and yet he pulled back. That there is an ability that the man has to pull back. So it's not to the degradation of Yosef, it's actually building up Yosef. So one can, wonder about that, but that at least is the answer that the Torah Tamima gives. But what happens here, Yosef goes to the house. It's actually unclear that Yosef knew that Ashes Potiphar was going to be there, right? How did Yosef know that Ashes Potiphar was going to be there? He said that day that I'm not feeling well. But Yosef goes, and Yosef is in the house, and he seems to be secluded with Ashes Potiphar. So I didn't see that there are any Hilchos Yichud that are actually learnt out from this in any way, possibly because it's a little vague whether Yosef was in violation of Yichud because maybe he didn't know that Potiphar was there. It was just at the last moment that he finds himself in this house secluded with Potiphar, right? He walks in, he's taking care, he's putting away the laundry, all of a sudden Ashes Potiphar shows up, and he said, maybe he could have said, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be out at the Avodah Zarah party, right? And so maybe there wasn't actually a violation, or maybe there was, but either way, it behooves us often to just refer to some of those halachas when it comes to Hilchos Yichud. So there is the laws of Yichud, the main sugya, although it appears in a couple of other places in Shas, the main sugya of the laws of Yichud appear at the very end of Maseches Kedushin. Daf Yomi is soon to be arriving there at Maseches Kedushin. We're soon to be concluding Maseches Kedushin and Seder Nashim, which might be an opportune time for anybody who wants to get on to start with Maseches Baba Kama in 2 weeks. Anyone? Any volunteers? But the Gemara there says, the Mishnah there on Pei Amud Beis says, Lo yisyachid adam im shnei nashim, person's not allowed to be with two women, v'lo yisha achas misyachedes im shnei nashim, but woman's allowed to be with two women. It spells out some of the technical details of these laws of Yichud. So the Gemara says, what's the reason? First, the Gemara starts off by saying, my taima, that the rules seem to be different for men and women, meaning a man should not be with two women, but a woman could be with two men. So the Gemara says, "V'naishim daitos kalosale," because the women are easily convinced or something, persuaded. So therefore, the rules are a little bit enhanced in that direction. So then the Gemara asks, "Mina hanimili?" Right. So where do we get this from? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Remez liyichud mina Torah minayin. How do you see? Where do you see a hint in the of yichud in the Torah? Where do we see it? So Shneamar ki yasischa achecha ben amecha. So the Pasuk says, if your brother, the son of your mother, will be mesis you. Anybody know what it means to be a mesis? No, mesis is a totally different halacha. This has nothing to do with Hilchos Yichud or Nashim or Arayos. Mesis is when you convince someone else to do a Avodah Zarah. So if you convince someone else to do a Avodah Zarah, so you are also Chayiv Misa. I'll just give you a quick shaila. I wrote an article about this years ago at this question in a Torah journal that to be a mesis, the Gemara says that you could even be a mesis by just doing a Avodah Zarah. By just doing a Avodah Zarah in front of other people, by just demonstrating it in a way you're convincing other people to do it. So I raise the following question. If that's the case, how does anyone ever violate a Avodah Zarah? Right? If by definition, how does anyone get killed for a Avodah Zarah? That's what I mean. Was if by the only way you could be killed for violating a Avodah Zarah is if there's two witnesses that watch you. Well, if there's two witnesses that are watching you, you're no longer an Ovid of Avodah Zarah, you're now a Mesis. So, or I liked my title. Be'inyan Mesis Musas for Ovde Avodah Zarah. That was my title. Mesis is the one who's causing others, and the one who's being caused, and the one who's. Okay. Anyways. So that's what this pasuk is about. When you are convinced by your brother, the son of your mother. So the Gemara says, "V'chi ben aim mesis ben av eno mesis." Wait a second. Only the son of your mother, I mean your half brother through your mother's side, could be a mesis, and your half brother through your father's side can't be a mesis. So the Gemara says, "Well, el omer elcha ben misyachid imimo v'asur lisyachid im kol arayah shevatari." That a son is permitted to be misyachid with his mother, and you're not allowed to be misyachid with other arayos in the Torah. I mean, the prohibition of a man and female being together doesn't apply to a male and his mother, or probably the opposite, you know, the other as well, a mother, a female, and their father. But this is the din. So we see from here that there is a prohibition of yichud. It just doesn't apply in that particular circumstance. So is that a din d'oraisa? Is that a biblical prohibition? It's a little hard to say that. We generally that doesn't sound like a biblical prohibition. That sounds like what we call an asmachta. That sounds like, yeah, there's a hint to it in the Torah, but really it's a din d'rabanan. However, there are a few other mesechtos and shas that seem to clearly imply that the laws of Yichud are actually a din d'oraisa. That the Gemara asks someplace else, Meseches Sanhedrin and Meseches Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara asks, talks about the laws of Yichud in these places. Particularly, I'm referring specifically here to the Gemara and Sanhedrin, and Daf Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph, going on to Amud Beis, that the Gemara asks there, that it talks about the laws of Yichud being gozered. The laws of Yichud were then established for established by David HaMelech. So the Gemara asks, What do you mean David HaMelech established the laws of Yichud? The laws of Yichud are prohibited on a level of Zoraisa. They're biblical. What are you talking about? So what do you see from there? You see that the Gemara seems to be understanding the laws of Yichud as being biblical. Where would the source for that be? So it's a little hard to say that it comes from this pasuk that seems to have nothing to do with it. It probably comes from the idea of Yasumish Meris L'Mishmarti. The idea that there's a Din D'Rabbanan, which is the source for all breaking all of Dinei D'Rabbanan. It was in last week's parsha, the parsha before, the end of parsha's Achrimos, the last pasuk in Achrimos. After listing off all of the Arayos, it says Asumish Mer. That language is in Kedushin. Is in, I mean, not is in Kedushim. Yeah, the list of arayos, the list of prohibitions are in both of them. Right. But at the very end of Parshas Achrimos, it says, "Don't do any of these things." Ve'asu l'mishmeres l'mishmarti, and you should make a you should guard my guardianships. Which sounds like there is a rabbinic responsibility to safeguard the Torah. Which is, and if that's the case, so then that sounds like every rabbinic law is really a deoraisa law. Right, that's what it sounds like from that situation. I gave my shiur this past Shabbos to Menachem Marv on that topic. Yeah, it's the very last pasuk in Parshas Achrimos, page 654. You shall safeguard my charge. Do not do any of the abominable traditions that were done before you, and do not contaminate yourself through them. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am Hashem, your God. So one can make a case then, I think, that you, yeah, it's that even though the general rules of Dinei Derabanan are rabbinic, when the Torah commands specifically about this topic to make rabbinic safeguards, maybe then it rises up to a level of Doraisa. I mean, the Torah is telling you, you need safeguards around Arayas. So what is included in what the Torah was telling us to do? So it's very possible that the laws of Yichud were included in those prohibitions about Arayas, and therefore perhaps it could be considered to have a status of an Isser Doraisa. But anyways, that Gemara continues and says, so David established the laws of Yichud. What caused David to establish the laws of Yichud? What could possibly be in David's life that he established the laws of Yichud? So one could say, well, he got together with Bathsheba, except the only challenge with that is that the laws of Yichud wouldn't necessarily guarded against that, because the implication you get from the pasuk is that David saw her from afar and then had Bia. But perhaps more than that, the source that the Gemara does have is the story of Amnon and Tamar, where Amnon ends up raping Tamar, and the Gemara there comments that that as a result of that, so they established the laws of Yichud so that they wouldn't have these situations together. Now, mind you, Amnon and Tamar are brother and sister. So the laws of Yichud wouldn't necessarily have guarded against that act, but they saw that these are the issues that we have to be careful about the laws of about them being together, and that will hopefully withstand these things. So what was it that David established? The Gemara says the Gemara.
He raped her, though.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't okay. Consensual.
So hold on a second on that. So the Gemara comments. So when the dindo raisa is between arayos. Is between prohibited relationships, meaning a married woman with another man, and what David established was even ala panuya, even for girls that aren't married. So Bruce asks, well, wait a second, that was a rape, okay? So the laws of Yichud could have prevented that. Now Bruce is like, well, wait a second, does that mean that we're blaming the victim? So this actually is, if anybody is up to date in the Jewish blogosphere, this was a major, major, major issue over the last month or two, where Rabbi Stephen Przanski wrote an article about rape culture, what's known in the world as rape culture, and made a comment that not every time that a girl cries rape isn't necessarily mean that she was actually raped. And he got harangued for it. You're blaming the victim. It got really, really, it was, I think, pretty disgraceful what was done to him. But he wrote a follow-up article where he made a point from this Gemara. He said, nobody's blaming Tamar for the fact that she was raped. But nevertheless, we didn't stop the rabbis from saying, you know what, maybe if we could avoid male and females being in this situation, that could be considered a good thing. Doesn't mean we blame the victim after the fact, but doesn't mean that we say, all right, well, we're not going to make any put up any guardrails to make sure this doesn't happen again in the future. So he brought the source. I thought that was a very good use of that Gemara. Okay, what else do we have in Hilchus Yichud? So one of the issues that come up in Hilchus Yichud, and famous issues. There's a famous chakira when it comes to Hilchus Yichud. Chakira is when we analyze law and try to figure out what exactly is the prohibition. So what could be a chakira in Hilchus Yichud? So what is the prohibition? Is the prohibition to not have yichud in a scenario where they could possibly have relations together, where they could actually be intimacy? Or does Hilchus Yichud just a rule that male and female are not allowed to be... What? Yichud means being secluded. Male and female being secluded together. Right? So is it only in a scenario where they could possibly have relations? Or is it, no, there's a prohibition for male and female to be together, regardless of whether there's actually a potential for relations to take place. So what would be a nafkamina? What would be a practical ramification of how one would decide that issue? Let me think of one. Right? On one hand, you'd say, well, is it that we just want to make sure that they don't have relations together? Or is it, even if there's no possibility that relations could take place, we're still going to prohibit them from being together?
It's not a yichud issue.
Where there should always be a mechitza is not really a yichud issue. That's a tznius issue. But what about but what issue would be here? If there's not a potential, so what would be a scenario, a practical scenario like that? Well, doctor's office is a potential. I mean, there's nothing that is an issue. We'll get to that in a moment. Yeah, okay. But there's nothing technically that restrains one from having to doing that activity in a doctor's office.
Right.
Any others?
A meeting at work,
but that's the same thing. You could lock the door. There's nothing physically that is restraining one from doing that activity.
Leaving the door open,
but leaving the door open won't be yichud.
Right.
That's not yichud then. That's not, you never, right? But how about the following? What about if you're going into an elevator together? So technically you are secluded together, right? But the door is going to open in 10 seconds. It's going to be on a different floor. What is the minimum amount of time? So the Gemara has that discussion. There are some people in this room that learned the Gemara and Sota. Then the Gemara and Sota has a dispute, like a 15-way dispute, as to what is the minimum time for relations that we would consider that relations could take place. And the Gemara has a conclusion. It's a few minutes, I think, is one or two or three minutes or something would be the minimum amount. Right, it's somewhat short, but longer than the amount at the time would be in an elevator, right? So is there an issue with a male and female being secluded in an elevator together? So, okay, what about another issue? What about if the man is completely impotent? The man is impotent, so they're not going to be, so they can't do it, so they can't do it, they can't do it, right? So
that's irrelevant, though.
Why is that irrelevant? I mean, if it's all a safeguard of that activity, then if the activity can't take place, we don't have to worry about it. It's recognizable. The man has Alzheimer's disease, right? So it's known. It's not a Marasayan issue. Hold on a minute. So with regards to the general question, before we get to Sam's power failure challenge, with most of these questions, we paskin lemaisa lekula. We paskin that if it's really if there's an impossibility that relations could take place, so then the laws of yichud are waived. However, the yish machmir, there are those who are either machmir in general or that are machmir for themselves. To avoid such situations.
What about internet relations?
Okay. Hold off on that.
The whole time they fall in love.
Yeah, but that's not yichud, and that's not, the Torah doesn't recognize that as an act of relations. That's not an act of bia, as is known in the Gemara. Now, there are other issues with there, and probably I was actually on a committee a few years ago that ended up not really publishing its findings. I was on a committee to establish laws, internet, like halachos, that we would, you know, pass out in the, you know, centrist Orthodox world. And that was the conclusion that I came to, and I was hoping the committee would, is that the with all of the guards and with all of the filters, all that kind of stuff, kids could get around all that stuff. The main thing to do is to have is to do yichud things, to make sure the computer is always in a public place, and to use these programs that actually record your websites that and have a buddy that the other person will see what you are. That the laws of yichud are probably the best way to pattern many of these many issues. So Gemara has such halachos by the laws of tzedakah, to not have one person that's in charge of all the tzedakah, that there should be two people. It's part of the reasons for the Eruv that I appreciate, not just that it's safer to have a driver and a checker, but to have two people involved with doing it, so the person knows that I'm not going to cut any corners or, you know, skip any parts of the Eruv, because I know someone else will know about it. Hilchos Yichud is probably the halachically most proven way of avoiding private wrongdoings.
I mean, I think this is one of the geniuses of Yiddishkeit. Try to cross the board, they realized the limits of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Guy is a bad guy, a good guy. And even Tzaddikim, which the Tzaddik says this way and this way. So we're constantly aware of this.
Right.
Aware of our own shortcomings.
And they put up guards.
And that's why we have Chavrus.
Right.
The whole dynamic is...
Vasul Mishmeris L'Mishmarti.
Right.
Yeah.
And as you say, when the statement Shlomo HaMelech went bad, when it's Shlomo Ruz.
Right. Or the Tana who said, may your Yiri Shemayim be as great as your Yiri Sa'adam, as great as your fear of man. They said, really, that's it? He says, what, you think that's so little? That's a lot. Okay, so what's the issue with doctor's offices? So doctor's offices is a challenge. There's a challenge both ways. There's a challenge for the patient who's visiting a doctor who's not going to be careful about these things. There's a challenge for the from doctor who has patients in these issues. So so the general approach, I think, is really to leave the door open, not to leave the door open, at least to leave the door unlocked. Leave the door unlocked, so then it's known. That nurse, right? So A, not to go into the room yourself, and beyond, not going through, if that's not feasible, so at least to have the door unlocked, with the possibility that somebody could be walking in at any time. If somebody could be walking in at any time, that's generally considered halachically a good enough safeguard to avoid the laws of yichud. Yeah. Yeah, did you going to say something? Right, so the man with two women is technically still going to be a problem of yichud, but generally if a nurse could go in, someone else could go in, and the door's open. The door's open, other people are able to come.
The woman goes to the doctor, you bring her spouse with her, okay?
Right, so that's wonderful if the spouse is available to go with her.
You say that two men with a male nurse, that would be better than a female nurse?
Technically, it would. I mean, the Mishnah says that there's an issues of Adam im Shtein, that there is a problem of one man with two women, and there's not the same problem with two women and one man. Now, I will add that gets increased, meaning the Gemara talks about, and then Shulchan Aruch talks about, that's for Tzaddikim, but Bali Avera have bigger stringencies, and then the question is, well, what do you consider Bali Avera? Yeah. So in some of the Hilchos Yichud books, it includes, actually, if you go to one of the wedding halls here, the one of the wedding halls in Lakewood, I forget which one, they have these signs along the hallway that of these signs that were signed many years ago about Shmir Shavuos and different campaigns that were on. And one of them is about television. And the psak from that thing is that if you have a television in your house, you're considered a Baal Aveira and you wouldn't qualify for the Yichud issues. So in one of the laws of Yichud books, one of the English laws of Yichud books, it collects these articles in the back and lists among those that are Bali Avera, people that own TVs, and has all of these letters in the back proving that if you own a TV, so then you fall into this category. I'm not sure that Lemaisa that would apply in our community, but anyways, that's the that psak is out there. There is... Oh, what about the paraphernalia in the elevator? So the people, the issue, well, is there's two issues. One issue is, well, am I allowed to go into an elevator lest there be a power failure?
Right.
So I think we can rely on what's called the rove, majority, that the majority of time there is not a power failure in the elevator. Otherwise, people generally would not take elevators. Is there a responsibility if you're in the elevator and then there is a power failure? Is there something, like, what could you possibly do? I mean, there are some crazy things that a person could do. Right? And one could even make a claim that there might be a halachic basis to do some of those things. Because as we discussed in this year, no, it was the Monday night year, that we discussed the idea of Avuzrayhu, the Gilei Arayos, or Avuzrayhu, the Avodazara, that the extensions of these halachos sometimes maintain some of the stringencies of the halachos themselves. So just as there's an the Gemara in Avodazara talks about not to drink water from something that is in Avodazara. That looks like you may be doing a Vodazara. You're not, but it's a Mara Zayin. So the Gemara says you can't do it. It sounds almost from the Gemara that give up your life rather than drink this water, because it looks like you're doing a Vodazara, even though you're not. So how could that possibly be? So one answer is that it's not, and you understand the Gemara in a different way. The other answer is, well, that's an extension, because it's an extension of Vodazara. The laws of Gilei Arayos then extend. The laws of Vodazara extend. So just as a Vodazara is a Yehorig Val Yavar Din, so too it's going to then extend to other, to the extensions of it as well. So Marasayan will then extend to that halacha as well. Okay.
Is there a distinction between, let's say, a man or a woman with all strangers, as opposed to a man or woman who know each other? Because if you think if they know each other, then it would be more stringent.
It's worse.
Strangers, then,
Yeah, so there are such distinctions that are made. These are in the details of Hilchos Yichud. I'm not prepared to give you the exact things, but those distinctions are made. The truth is, in that tshuva, the main tshuva about doctor's offices by the Tzitz Eliezer Waldenberg, who was the posik for Shari Tzedek Hospital, so he had to deal with some of these questions. So one of the leniences there is that because it's a professional scenario, that perhaps gives you more room to be lenient. That's not room on its own, but combined with the other things he discusses, that gives us enough to be lenient in these situations. Rav Moshe Feinstein, a few other caveats. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about carts. This question: what about a boy and girl going into a car together? So Rav Moshe Feinstein actually says, "L'chadchila vaday ein lahatir." You shouldn't have a boy and girl go into a car together because they're yichud there, because they're in the middle of Montgomery Avenue. So there's no yichud there, but they may go someplace else where there is yichud. Now that is a questionable assumption. Obviously it's a questionable assumption, so people might not do it. But it's also a questionable halachic assumption, because the Gemara itself talks about if you're in an apartment with a locked door, but the window is wide open to the street, so you don't have to worry about yichud, because everybody could see right. You can go to the next room over, and they won't see you. Right? The assumptions of yichud are only kashir hushan, where you are right now. The halachas of yichud do not say, oh, you can't do this because you may go and over there someplace else and do that. So what's Rav Moshe mean by this? So I was really bothered by this. I remember the summer before I knew I was going to start dating. So over that summer, I learned Hilchos Yichud in Mar Shachol. Right. So I remember asking Rabbi Willig about this. I remember asking Rabbi Willig a lot of questions about Hilchos Yichud. And a lot of his answers were just, you use Seichel HaYashar, you get into the details, the nitty-gritty. He said the most important thing in learning Hilchos Yichud is using your common sense. I remember him saying that to me. So I asked him about this tshuva of Rav Moshe. How could Rav Moshe say you're not allowed to go into a car with a girl unless you go someplace else? It's a great line. He said that tshuva from Rav Moshe, it's a pella. Meaning it's a wonderment. It's a pella, that tshuva. Rav Moshe asked getting married. You ask her getting married. How are you supposed to get married if you can't go into a car with a girl and date together? So a couple of months later, I found myself at a wedding with Rav David Feinstein, and I asked him about this tshuva, and he said, no, Rav Moshe doesn't say that. He says you're not allowed to go into a car with a girl when you're in a secluded area. So I didn't have the tshuva in front. I didn't have it in my pocket then to pull it out. That's not what the tshuva says. But I asked somebody else about it later on, another Rebbe in white, Rebbe Simon, and I asked him about that. I told him, you know, the tshuva. He said the same thing. Yeah, it's a pella. Nobody holds like that. But, tshuva. I said, but so I asked Rav David Feinstein about it, and this is what he told me. He said, yeah, Rav David wasn't telling you that's what Rav Moshe held. He was telling you that's what Rav Moshe, like, really held. Something like that. Even though it didn't come out that way in the tshuva, Rav Moshe really held that males and females can go into a car together and drive in the middle of the city. Yeah, there's some questions at night because you can't see in. What about tinted windows? Whatever. But that's the basis for the argument. One more story, especially as we have some Chabad members of our community here. So it is well known. It is well known. So the issue of yichud comes up in the issue of adoption. I mean, how could a family adopt a child if for one of whichever sex the child is, it's going to be different than one of the parents? So isn't that going to lead to problems of hilchus yichud? So the answer is yes. The answer is it does lead to problems of hilchus yichud. And it is apparently well known that the Lubavitcher Rebbe held that you couldn't do, yet you shouldn't adopt for that reason. That he advised Lubavitcher Chassidim that they shouldn't adopt for that reason. So there is... So it is also well known that Rav Moshe the Rav Soloveitchik and Lubavitcher Rebbe had a relationship together, and the Rav didn't feel that way. The Rav felt that it is okay to adopt a child, and because even though I remember Rav Schachter once discussing this, he said, "What are the percentages of a parent that molests a child? Their own natural child." So okay. excluding specific, we don't have to discuss specific people. But what are the percentages out there? So I don't know, 0.04%, whatever the percentages are. So does that percentage rise when it's an adopted child? So there is a quote from the Lavush where the Lavush said that no, the Lavush said that because that what does the heter come from a parent and a child being together? Is it just a technical permissibility that the father and his daughter are just biologically related, and therefore they would never be in terms of that type of activity? Or is it that, no, the father raised the daughter. The daughter was, he diapered her, he raised her, he knew her all along. And what kind of person would then do that activity with their daughter? So if you assume the second way, that if a parent raised the child, right, they're never going to do that type of activity, so then there's room to say that adoption also. You adopt the child when it's very young, when the child is very young, and even though there might be a possibility something could happen, but we would still perhaps be makel on the laws of Yichud. So, right. So one can make a claim that a mentally normal person who adopts a child is not going to do these types of things. So there is but you can hear the opposition also, right? There's a fair opposition also. A din is a din. The halacha is the halacha. It's not a father. The father-child not related. And that's the halacha, regardless of whether, right, like we discussed before, regardless of whether it's possible, not possible, whatever, or likely or unlikely, the halacha is the halacha, and as much as you want to say that they're related, they're not technically related. Technically, the child is not going to have to sit shiva for the parent, right? They're technically not related. So there is a story here. The original source is from Rabbi, there's a book out, Mentor Generations, Reflections of Rav Soloveitchik, where this, somebody a little around my age, somebody named Rabbi Dr. Zev Elef, he's now in Chicago. So he went around and found I think he was editor of The Commentator, which is a student newspaper of YU. And he went around, when he was editor, he went around to as many former Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik as that he can get, and he had them write or dictate their reflections on being in the Rav Shir or knowing Rav Soloveitchik. And there's fascinating stories in here. The best, no, they didn't go to, he's not on the list. There is a list here on the back of all the people he went to. The most fascinating I found, the most inspiring I found are the stories of people that knew the Rav from Boston, that they were like kids in Maimonides when the school started. Those are like, wild stories. He was like a person. He was a Rav, he was a rabbi. But there's a story here of Rabbi Saul Berman. Rabbi Saul Berman was the rabbi of the Young Israel of Brookline. He was, I think, a Talmud of the Rav, and then was also the rabbi in Boston for a little bit. And he said, and this story is also quoted in Talushkin's book, the Rebbe. You can see find the story there as well. He says, in the early 1980s, I spoke to the Rav about how the Lubavitcher Rebbe viewed adoptions. The Rebbe generally opposed adoption within his community because he considered the Isser Yichud Doraisa to be applicable in a relationship between an adoptive mother and her adopted son of bar mitzvah age. He considered the Isser Yichud Durabanan to be applicable between an adoptive father and his adopted daughter above the age of 12, meaning he assumed that there was a problem. He knew that many prior conversations, I knew from many prior conversations with him that the Rav differed on this matter and considered the functional parent-child relationship to be sufficient to eliminate the Isur Yichud, right, despite the absence of biological relationship. Right? Right. A legitimate machlokas between the two of them. So as we spoke further on this debate, the Rav asked me, what do you think the Rebbe does when there is a family in his community whom he himself thinks ought to adopt children? Right? What do you think he does? So Rabbi Berman said, I had no answer. So the Rav broke into a broad smile and said, then he sends them to me to Paskin the Shaila. And he continues, what's an extraordinary picture of the Rav provided us with two giants, understanding that their opposite positions were both Divrei Elokim Chayim, were able to use their positions they personally rejected to serve the emotional needs of the people for whom they cared for and shepherd cared in their flocks. Now, I will tell you halachically that is a challenging paragraph. Because if somebody is a Lubavitcher Chassid, it's very, I'm challenged by how this works exactly on a halachic level. But you just see the, you know, the camaraderie and the association that the two of them had together on this issue. I'll conclude with one more story that I was told also. Rabbi Willig, I remember when I was in YU, Rabbi Mordechai Willig gave a shiur about these issues. He talked about adoption. He was talking about negiah with children. Like, this is even a further question, right? Can a father touch his daughter, his adopted teenage daughter, right? Not a 5-year-old, and a teenage daughter, right? Can one, but who was raising for a long time? Is there a halachic issue there? So I remember he thought that there's room to be makel, but there's also room to be macher. There's room to assume why one would be stringent. So he told us the story of somebody, I remember if it was a congregant of his or not, that he adopted a girl. And he also had his own daughter. And in order so that the adopt, and he wasn't going to touch the adopted daughter. In order for that, for the adopted daughter not to feel bad, he never gave his own daughter a hug either.
Right. Okay.
So finally, on the day of the daughter's wedding, his biological daughter said, you know, like, maybe today I can have a hug.
Right.
And that's the way the story ended. So the truth is, I remember I learned with my chavrusa at the time. My chavrusa said you could have also seen a different conclusion to that story, right? Like, you can see that story going another way also. But that's the way that the story at least that story goes. And these are difficult issues. Just giving you a couple of the things that come up, but obviously technical questions should be analyzed on their own merit. Okay. Stop here.
I know it's a quote of a fact.